Let's now move. We have some distinguished guests waiting. Let's move on to item 1048, please.
Amend regulations for marijuana license procedures and requirements.
Okay. Let's see. I think we're going to call on some state legislators first. So,
Mayor, before we do that.
I'm sorry. I was getting some instructions from staff. So you've read the item?
Not the full title. I'm sorry. 1048, amend regulations for marijuana license procedures and requirements to provide a process for converting existing medical dispensaries to recreational retailers and amend hours of operation.
Okay. Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you. So this is the fourth hearing we've had on this issue in recent months. And we just want to summarize and remind everybody how we came to today and what we're doing today. First of all, I appreciate our state legislators, particularly Senator Ginny Burdick and Representative Ann Linger, who afforded the city with the opportunity and authority to tailor our rules to fit our locality in addition to abiding by the state laws on recreational marijuana sales. So that's what we've been working together to do with great community input from both neighborhoods and industry representatives over the past several months. And we held three town halls, and as I said, this is the fourth public hearing. So to reiterate what our values are as we have been looking to authorize and regulate the sales of recreational marijuana. First of all, we didn't want to be overly burdensome. We recognized that the voters of Multnomah County passed the Measure 91 by 72%, almost as good as the Parks Bond, but not quite, and that this is now something that's a legal substance in our community. We wanted to protect the medical patients' access, that this council has been strongly in favor of medical marijuana since it was first authorized, and we want to make sure that medical patients continue to get access to the medications that they need. To the extent that we wanted to give preferential treatment to dispensaries that have been serving patients for some time. We appreciate the service that they have given to our community, and that by and large we've had very few complaints about their operations. The council decided that we wanted to avoid saturation by setting not only the 1,000-foot buffer between organizations, the dispensaries versus the dispensaries, and the retailers versus the retailers, but that we wanted to extend that courtesy to have a 1,000-foot buffer, both to avoid saturation in the neighborhoods and, again, to give an additional benefit for existing medical dispensaries. We had heard from the industry that that was something that they wanted. And we wanted to maintain opportunities for new businesses to compete for sites on a level playing field, and we have structured the application process to do that. And then we have some further discussions since the last hearing on how much of a leg up, if any, do we want to give businesses who have begun participating in the process but are not yet actively providing care to medical patients. So the amendments that were published in the council agenda are a product of the discussions over the past week. We did do what Commissioner Fish asked us to do and locked everybody in a room for 4 hours and then had a second meeting, also had some significant discussions with the task force and others. And the amendments that we have on the table, first of all, amend the hours of operations from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. to 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. In line with recently adopted Oregon Liquor Control Commission, OLCC rules. So that's our first amendment. We haven't heard too much controversy over that one. The second one that we published on Friday is an amendment to City Code subsection 14B130040D, adding a new subsection 4, which provides for additional dispensaries that are currently operating and allows for them to convert to have a 5-day business day window to convert from a medical dispensary to a recreational dispensary, essentially jumping the queue. And so those were the amendments that we have on the table. We have an additional proposed change, a couple of additional proposed changes as a result of continued negotiations. In fact, I thank Commissioner Novick for the extra long trails hearing because that worked out really well for refining this. So those of you who were not party to those conversations, this is new, so I hope it addresses some of the concerns that we've heard. First of all, that this would be an additional amendment to subsection 14B130040D2A, which would allow the grandfathering of the distance requirement not only for the previous dispensaries that we already mentioned, but change the date of being in good standing with the Oregon Health Authority. Instead of just of January 1st, we're going to change it to July 1st of 2015. So that's any registered operating and in good standing with the Oregon Health Authority dispensary since on July 1st, 2015 is also grandfathered in. Plus, we're adding I'm proposing to add a hardship clause following that, saying that registered and in good standing dispensaries with the Oregon Health Authority before September 30th, 2015 may be included if the director finds that the applicant demonstrates that they have incurred significant financial obligations prior to that date, including entering a lease, hiring employees, and obtaining fixtures and equipment. This recognizes that there are some businesses that have in good faith been working with the system and gone through a significant expense that may not yet actually have opened their doors to patients as of September 30th. In order to make those two amendments work, we're also proposing to amend C in that section to change the date that the medical dispensary has to have a valid City of Portland business license to July 1st of 2015.
Okay, so Commissioner Fitch moves those amendments. Is there a second?
Second for purpose of discussion.
Okay. And discussion, please.
Well, no, we have other amendments put on.
Okay.
Yeah. So can we vote on one each one?
We should take action on these unless there's something in conflict with them, what you want to bring up.
I think you're going to want to have all four amendments on the table.
Okay.
And we can decide.
All right. So this was moved in second, and let's discuss this, and we can take other amendments.
So, Mayor, I'm just trying to keep track of everything and hopefully provide some guidance for the public. We have the published amendments, which I think we should just call the ONI package, or whatever you want to call it.
Ones that Commissioner Fritz just described.
Yeah, we have the two, one hours of operation and one the other change to 040. That's the package that was published. Commissioner Fritz has just put her amendment on the table. I'll call that the Fritz amendment. I'd like to offer the Fish amendment. Carla, if you could please circulate that.
Okay.
At this point, may I have staff come up, please?
And Ben Walters, can you come up, too, so you can ask any questions?
Can I ask Commissioner Fritz a question about her amendment?
You want to hand up my amendment, too?
Subsection 2i says, a significant financial obligations prior to that date, including entering a lease, hiring employees, and obtaining fixtures and equipment. So the way I would read that is you have to have done all three. And I was wondering if that's the intent or what you really meant was such as entering a lease, hiring employees, or obtaining fixtures and equipment.
Ben? Ben Walters, City Attorney.
Ben Walters, City Attorney's Office. Commissioner Novick, I believe it was the former that they would be cumulative, but it's up to the council's to make a determination as to whether it should be one or the other. But as drafted, it was intended to be cumulative.
Okay, Commissioner Fish, you want to proceed?
So, Mayor, I'd like to put before you and my colleagues what we'll just call the Fish Amendment and provide you some context before we open it up. First of all, I deeply appreciate the way Commissioner Fritz and Teresa and staff have been navigating this process. It's a complicated issue, and I'm reminded that John Muir once said that everything is connected, and I think nothing better that has great application in the natural world, but I think also in the legislative process. When you make a little change here, it has ripple effects there, and so we're trying to be comprehensive in our view. And Teresa, I think you've navigated this process through some very choppy waters very successfully to get to this point. And actually, I view this end game and the debate as a very healthy byproduct of the process that you've sponsored, because we're now going to make some decisions, and they are decisions that have some values propositions, and that uniquely is within the council's prerogative to decide which approach. So the amendment that I put on the table, and that I discussed with Commissioner Fritz yesterday, is designed to get at a concern that I have. So to step back for a second, there's two major events that are looming on the horizon. One is getting through the licensing process of the city, and we have very stringent requirements. I'm not proposing to interfere with that process currently. But the second is deciding who goes to the head of the line, to the front of the line, when we open things up, based on some recognition that people who have made investments and have operated it responsibly shouldn't be put into the same pot with everybody else and at risk if they are randomly not first, second, or third in line of being subject to the 1,000-foot rule and then essentially put out of business. So we're trying to come up with a reasonable set of rules that recognizes that good actors who've made some kind of investment ought not to be put at a disadvantage in the process to follow, which is a competitive process. We can argue about whether we're talking about creating an advantage or mitigating a disadvantage. I view it more as the latter. My concern is with folks that have made an investment, changed their circumstance, gone down the road who might be put out of business under the current framework. I deeply appreciate that Commissioner Fritz, in her amendment, has narrowed the gap between the two approaches pretty significantly. And so she's now suggesting July 1st, 2015, with a hardship that, process which would make exceptions for people up through September 30th, 2015. In essence, what I'm proposing is we move it all the way to the end of the year and create a slightly more flexible process, but one that doesn't disadvantage folks who've made an investment without distinguishing between the classes of people who've made those investments. I'm categorizing investors and small businesses and even speculators as roughly the equivalent for purposes of my amendment. Commissioner Fritz has a principled objection to my approach, and I deeply appreciate that. And so what we've agreed is to put the amendment on the table, take some testimony, and then decide which is the preferred approach. And so my amendment is designed to eliminate the barrier to that, even with the Fritz amendment, which would prevent someone who has made a significant investment from going to the head of the line during the window where we say certain classes of people get first dibs. And that's the intent. It's been reviewed by counsel. Hopefully I haven't mangled the explanation too much, and I would offer the amendment.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second. Okay. And I have an amendment.
Okay. Questions, discussion? Yes, there was a second.
So I'd like to discuss that amendment. First of all, you just said something different, Commissioner Fish, that you said that something about the grandfathering going through the end of the year. The issue is that we're going to be issuing recreational licenses in December. So is your intent that anybody who gets and also this amendment, we already require, we don't issue licenses. The code that the council has already adopted says that they have to have a valid license from the state before they were going to actually issue their license. Right. So this is, we think, confusing. I need to clarify that my amendment says that those who are in good standing by September 30th and prove that they have had the investment do get to jump the line.
Correct.
So and yours doesn't do that.
Well, the intent of our approach is to actually close the gap between September 30th and whatever date, December, end of the year, so that those category of businesses would not be left to the vagaries of things, seeing who's first in line. Certainly, we're open to clarifying that. I acknowledge the point that you make, though, about the existing language in the code. My reading of that language, though, is that is in the section that goes to the administrative process of determining whether to issue a license. We're talking about here who gets the preferential opportunity to compete for a license. And I think there are two different sections of the code.
I don't understand how your amendment does that.
All right, well, maybe we can get some staff and legal counsel analysis as we proceed about how these amendments affect each other now that we're getting them all on the table. We'll have a chance to do that both now and after we take some testimony, but we have other amendments to put on the table. So let's keep going in this process and get everything out here. And then, again, I want to hear from our state legislators who are here and others from the public that might want to comment on all these amendments. Presumably, we've got copies out here at the council clerk's office.
The copies were filed with the Tuesday memo, so they should be in your packet.
I don't mean just for us. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Oh, yeah, but yeah. I brought extra copies because I know how I misplace things. And
okay.
Pass one down to Steve there.
Yep. So, again, if we've got extra copies of these for people in the community that are trying to follow this, that'd probably be helpful for them.
Okay. So my amendment's really quite simple, and I'd just like to place this in context. First of all, as I said, it's pretty simple. It simply says that in the central city area, which is a clearly defined geographic area in our zoning code, it's more or less the I-405 loop and the Lloyd District, but it would remove the 1,000-foot separation requirement for retail establishments in that central city area. I do think that while the term green light district has been applied to this by the media, this really isn't quite what this is about. It really is a recognition, though, that a central city, we invest billions of dollars in making sure people can get downtown to work, to recreate, to live. We're a great city that we have all those attributes. And I don't think the saturation issue really applies to the central city like it may apply in some neighborhoods. So that's why I'm proposing to lift it. I think we should be encouraging competition, encouraging these businesses to open in the central city. And the other aspect of it, quite frankly, is that I think our actions, the state actions, the voters and the state legislature and our actions have really the potential to establish, a green tourism of an entirely different sort. I think we will have people coming here from other cities who want to appreciate what we've done here in Oregon. And I think making retail marijuana accessible in our central city, where our hotels, where our restaurants are, makes a lot of sense. It's not an attempt to, I don't think there's any downside to it. I think it's strictly an upside. And so that is what my amendment proposes, a simple elimination of the 1,000-foot boundary in the central city core.
Okay.
And I move that amendment.
Moves that amendment. Is there a second? I'll second it for purposes of discussion and public testimony.
Thank you.
All right. Other amendments? Okay. So now we have those amendments on the table. Do we have any particular requests for staff at this juncture? If not, we'll have them stand by. And then let me call up our state legislators who have been waiting patiently for the opportunity to give us some guidance from the state's perspective about this. Senator Burdick, Senator Dimbro, Representative Leininger, I believe you're all here, or at least a couple of you are still here. Come on up, please. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Thank you. Mayor Hales, members of the council, for the record, I'm Jenny Burdick. I represent the people of Senate District 18, which happens to include City Hall. I'm also co-chair with my colleague here, Representative Leininger, of the Joint Committee, no pun intended, on legalization of marijuana. We worked very hard during the legislative session to develop a legislative framework where cities and counties and local governments can adapt them to their own needs, their own people, and their own priorities, including opting out if they choose. I'm personally very pleased that Portland has taken the difficult path of really trying to make this work for everyone. It's a brand new world out there, and I really appreciate the efforts that you have put in. I particularly appreciate Commissioner Fritz's statement of values. We did that at the very beginning when we were doing the legislative framework, and to really keep in mind the priorities that you have, what you're really trying to accomplish, provides the best possible guidance. I've always seen programs like this as a partnership between the state and the local government. As most of you know, I'm a fervent supporter of local control. I have a high degree of trust in you all to get to good decisions. This is a very complicated issue. I will have to say, Commissioner Fritz, when you mentioned four hearings, I thought, oh, if we could have just done it in four hearings. This is very complicated stuff. The reason I'm here today is because there was one aspect of your rulemaking that drew my attention and drew the attention of a lot of people who have been working in this area for a long time, and that is the issue that was discussed in a couple of these amendments, which is the treatment of facilities that have already been permitted by the state and have made some kind of an investment. This falls in the category, as far as I'm concerned, is that of those dreaded unintended consequences, but it's very serious. I think for those, and I include all of us in this, who want a successful business and a business that responds well to the community, doesn't disrupt the community, but also respects the fact that these are small businesses. And while government is not in the business of protecting small businesses from the natural forces of the market, and yes, there will be a shakedown, on the other hand, we have to navigate very, very carefully so that we don't disadvantage people who, in good faith, have played by the rules, doing it right, have made the investment. I have no sympathy or care much about people who might be trying to game the system, might be trying to speculate. What I'm concerned is about the people who have made investments, gotten their permits, which are not cheap. The permits are $4,000, and that's an investment in itself. So I really appreciate what I'm hearing here today, that our concerns are being heard and that people are putting their heads together to try to navigate a solution here that meets the needs of your overall program, but still meets the needs of these small entrepreneurs who are out there trying to create a successful business, both in the medical and recreational market. So I'm going to turn it over to my co-chair here, and I'll answer questions anytime. But
while you're doing that, thank you, Senator. I apologize for not having been able to get to both of you our amendments. So I'm going to bring them down so you have them in front of you.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you. Representative Leininger, welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm Ann Leininger, State Representative for House District 38, which includes Southwest Portland and the city of Lake Oswego. And I've had the pleasure of serving together with Senator Burdick as co-chair of the state's Joint Marijuana Legalization Committee. And it's been important work that we were happy to sort of forward on to you good people for the next step in a complicated process. And I want to say I thank you so much for the work that you've undertaken and all of the refinements that clearly have been underway to meet reasonable concerns expressed in the community as we work through a rollout of how this is going to look in our communities. I used to be a Clackamas County Commissioner. So I know firsthand that local communities setting their own path and elected officials honoring that choice is really crucial. So I want to thank you for and say I honor and respect the fact that you're making time, place, and manner decisions that are appropriate for your community. And I wanted to raise also some concerns that I have heard, because we have heard from a lot of folks who are small business owners trying to play by the rules and launch good businesses in the legal cannabis sector. And one of the concerns we've heard is, gosh, what if the rules that are being implemented by the city of Portland create a situation where someone who's acted in good faith to follow the rules and make an investment in starting a new business and walked down that path inadvertently is boxed out by the sequence of events for getting a approvals from the city and approvals from the state also. I like what I'm hearing you say in terms of proposals to address that. I have not had a chance to review specific language from some of the proposals described just now, but I think the key point is I'm hearing you want to both, you know, honor the need for reasonable regulation to address time, place, and manner of these good businesses, but also address and honor the investment and time commitment made by small business owners who are trying to make a living, provide for their families, and help us move into an important new sector of our economy. So thank you.
Thank you.
Can we impose on you for a moment to stick around?
Sure.
As experts? Commissioner Fritz, I have a couple of ideas for how to bridge the divide. Can we have this conversation? Sure. So the proposal that we drafted yesterday was designed to be in lieu of the approach that was in the amendment. You have now proposed an amendment that is targeted to the existing framework. So I think in fairness, we should focus on your amendment first because it is consistent with the regulatory framework that's already been proposed. But then just see if there's a basis to narrow the difference. And so as I read the previous proposal, it said that with respect to the 1,000-foot rule, we were going to grandfather people in under certain circumstances. And one of the key triggers was whether the medical dispensary has been registered, operating in good standing with the Oregon Health Authority since on or before January 1, 2015. So AHA approval since on or before January 1, 2015. The concern that was raised was about small businesses operating between January 1, 2015 and November 1st, 2015 when things get opened up, and whether someone who's made an investment and is operating is essentially potentially put out of business because they're not first in line. So your amendment moves that January 1st, 2015 date forward to July 15th, 2015. So it captures a bunch of folks who have successfully obtained their AHA, who are registered, operating, and in good standing through July 1st. The gaps through July 1st. And furthermore, you've proposed a hardship waiver, which would capture people potentially up through September 30th, 2015. And I'm going to suggest that we not make it cumulative because I think the bar might be too high if it's cumulative. I think it should be including but not limited. I think it should be suggestive in the sub 2 language because if it's cumulative, we're setting the bar extremely high. But we can have that discussion. So what we're really talking about now is potentially a gap between September 30, 2015 and November 1, 2015. Am I right? That's now potentially where the gap is about someone who is otherwise registered, operating, and in good standing with the AHA who would not be covered by your proposal.
We're trying to distinguish between medical dispensaries that have been serving patients versus somebody who is trying to jump the line of other recreational businesses,
right,
who are patiently waiting for December 1st and haven't gone to the Oregon Health Authority because they intend to go or have gone to the Oregon Liquor Control Commission.
So I completely understand. I'm just asking a clarifying question. What we're really talking about now with both the date that you've suggested moving forward and the hardship exemption, we are now talking about potentially a gap of someone between September 30th, 2015 and November 1st who becomes registered, operating in good standing, who would not go to the front of the line on the single issue of the 1,000-foot rule and its application. That's the only person not covered by your amendment.
I'd need staff to weigh in on that.
I think that's right.
I'm not good at paraphrasing, but Teresa, I tried to state it simply. Am I right?
Thank you. So I think, and for the record, Teresa Marchetti, I think the distinction is that anyone who is registered and operating in good standing after September 30th would be standing in line next to a recreational hopeful that made potentially investments as well.
So go to REI, get your tent, and get there early because that's going to be first come, first serve. But I'm just talking about the gap that's left because Commissioner Fritz's amendment closes the gap of the concern that I had substantially because she's moved the triggering date from January 1st, 2015 forward to July 1st. That's a big jump, and that captures a lot of people who might otherwise be eligible for going to the head of the line over that six-month period. And she's built in a hardship process which potentially covers people all the way through September 30th. The gap that now exists for people who care about this issue, which is simply about who's impacted by the 1,000-foot rule, the unified 1,000-foot rule, is between September 30th, 2015 and November 1st. Am I right on that?
Yes. However, Commissioner, I just want to respectfully disagree that is the only population that's impacted. The business equity part of this is we are trying to establish a level playing field to the extent that we can, while also recognizing the existence and value of the medical community.
Right.
But what we're talking about from this point on, from October 1st on, essentially, is the emerging business, the emerging recreational business, and who has the first bite at the apple in that arena.
That Commissioner Fritz has made clear to me. And to me, that comes closer to gaming the system, as opposed to people that have established relationships with patients and have been operating in the community. So the reason I had this colloquy is I just want to make clear that we've now narrowed the gap dramatically. And my understanding, Commissioner Fritz, is that your amendment would have otherwise no impact on the licensing process that is established. So that you would still, all the existing conditions of getting a license, including whatever state approval you need, is not changed in any way by your amendment.
Correct, Commissioner. In fact, I don't know if you have your copy of the entire code that we've already passed with you.
Yes, I do.
If you look at 14B130030, where it says license required, I believe that states what's in your amendment, that no person shall operate without a medical dispensary or a marijuana business without a valid license from the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. And then C says nobody shall lawfully exist in the city without a state license and regulatory oversight. So I think that's your concern. Yeah. Was we've been at this so long that we've captured it long ago.
So Mayor Hales, can I make a suggestion?
Sure.
Because we're going to hear from a lot of thoughtful people, and we're going to get some testimony, and we're going to have one final chance to get it right, and then we may even slap an emergency clause on it. So
no, we don't need to slap an emergency clause.
We got till the first of the year.
Today's it. Yeah. We're gonna. I think it might make more sense to have the Fritz Amendment be the mark. Whatever. What would you say as a committee chair? The mark. The markup? Have Commissioner
That's Congress talk. Yes.
But I'm just thinking, because we're going to get confused about Fish and Fritz and blah, blah, blah. I would propose that Commissioner Fritz's amendment be the amendment on the table, and that people who have concerns about its scope address the amendment, because I think the amendment actually addresses my concerns. My proposal essentially changed the structure in order to get at the same issue. Commissioner Fritz is now proposing to modify the existing language. I actually think that's cleaner, and I think it's a thoughtful proposal. Whether the public in testifying agrees this is the right approach is another matter. But I think we should, I will withdraw my amendment now for purposes of having Commissioner Fritz's amendment be the lead amendment on this subject, and then reserve the right to offer any tweaks after the testimony.
Thank you.
Done. All right. Any other comments from the two of you in particular about this? Do you see any conflict with what you intended in terms of the state regulatory structure and what we're trying to accomplish here?
This is moving in the right direction. This is moving toward addressing our concerns. And, I'm not an expert enough to know how this on the ground will actually play out, but I do know it's moving in the right direction. I would really defer to the people who are going to be affected by this, especially the people who are really doing it right, have a track record of doing it right. We saw them a lot when we were building the legislation. We could not have built the legislation without them, and I would listen very tentatively to them.
And Mayor, just to observe one thing about the process. There was a flurry of amendments yesterday that were discussed, and then some meetings with all hands on deck talking about them. And I really appreciate that what Commissioner Fritz has done is modified the proposal that she was going to come to council with today to address those concerns. Whether this is the perfect solution or a good solution or whether there's a gap, we're going to hear from the public on. But I appreciate that this is a substantial change in response to some concerns that have been raised, and therefore I think it deserves to be the amendment on the table for consideration.
Thank you, and thank you, Senator Burdick and Representative Linajah. I am so proud that I voted for both of you, and I'm happy to still be your constituent, Representative Linajah.
Actually, on a completely irrelevant note, Senator Burdick, I want you to know that now you are the all-powerful majority leader, and I am a constituent, too. I expect lots of pork for Southwest Portland. I expect bridges to nowhere, military bases, the works.
You've always expected that, Representative Councilman Novick.
Any further comments, please, Anne?
Mayor Hills and commissioners, I think that the teamwork that is being demonstrated right now among this group is really impressive and an inspiration for all of us who want to see good government and positive decisions move forward. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both very much. We appreciate you coming today. Okay, so I think we should take public testimony on the Fritz Amendment and the Saltzman Amendment.
And the package that's in the ONI package.
That's right, the package of amendments before us as modified by the Fritz Amendment and by the Saltzman Amendment. So I hope that's at least clear enough that you know whether you think we're on the right track or not and can therefore give us feedback about that. So let's take testimony again just on the amendments. We'd like to try to keep this very focused.
Can we keep a copy of the Fritz Amendment at the table so that anyone who testifies has access to it?
Yeah, I have some extra ones. I will. Okay. We have a total of 15 people signed up.
Okay.
The first three, please, coming up are Adrian McElderry, Lene Berg, and Eli Bilton.
Okay, and we'll ask you to keep your testimony to 2 minutes just so we can try to keep the council here and get the work done today. So I know this is complicated stuff, so it may not be possible to do it in 2 minutes, but please try. Good afternoon.
Hello, Adrian McElderry. Thank you, Council and Mayor, for allowing us to participate in this conversation and this significant decision you guys are making. To begin with, I would just like to start with, I'm more interested in fairness and equality for everybody. Like, I understand the background and those who have displayed success and everything else have given to the community and have already demonstrated, you know, I mean, the effectiveness and the impact that they will have. But in that sense, this is going to have great economic impact for everybody, regardless if they're grandfathered in or if they get a license tomorrow to begin as a retailer, because that's not even being mentioned right now. In a sense, the dispensary and the medical professionals are basically in complete control of everybody. In the sense of the market, in the sense of pure capitalism, it doesn't exist, in my opinion, as an individual who smokes weed, not necessarily with the medical license, but it's legal now, so I can say that. And in a sense, I just, like I'm saying, I just think, I know it'll have a great impact in Portland, as well as throughout the entire state, as we've seen people come from all over the community to come in on this matter. And like I'm saying, the money totally, I heard last week on one of these newscasts that $11 million was made. You know what I mean? And the distribution of that is not necessarily that broad. When, like I'm saying, this is the pure market forces, you know what I mean, should control this more than selected people and protected classes. It is primarily my mission, you know what I mean? And so I'm saying, I would just like to say, in order to provide full benefits for people that use, I request council members allow everybody access to edibles and oils.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Coming soon.
Ms. Berg, you're next.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales and commissioners. My name is Lene Berg, and I'm the executive director of Downtown Clean and Safe and vice president of Downtown Services at the Business Alliance. I'm here to testify regarding the proposed amendment to lift the 1,000-foot ban on marijuana dispensaries in Portland's Central City. As you know, the Downtown Clean and Safe District is a 213-block area of downtown and is one of the most successful enhanced service districts in the nation. As you also know, businesses within this area pay a fee to raise money that supplements publicly financed services for neighborhood improvement, including cleaning, security, community justice services, and retail recruitment. Unfortunately, there has been little, if any, outreach with any of the participating businesses and residents within the district. We urge that you pull this amendment for further consideration to ensure that it is properly vetted by the many residents and businesses, including retailers and hoteliers in the central, the Clean and Safe District and in our broader central city. We believe because of the new nature of this industry, this proposal should be fully vetted by neighborhood associations, retailers, and other businesses in the central city before enacting a special rule that may adversely impact them. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Eli Bilton, CEO of Addis Trading Company. I'm very worried about the negative impact this will have on my businesses and other businesses. It will impact my employees unfairly and their families, personally myself and my family. I'm also worried about, the contracts that I'm in, if I'll be in breach of contract, if I do, on these dispensaries that are being built out right now that we have preliminary approvals on. I'm also worried about the leases that I have on my preliminary approvals. There's another question I have for the commissioners also is we purchased a dispensary this year, and the proposed ruling is ambiguous and unclear. We purchased a dispensary. It was a licensed dispensary before January 2015. Will I be grandfathered in or will I not be grandfathered in?
Well, do you think under this amendment that you will be? That's important, I think.
I believe that I should be, yes.
Well, sir, are you operating as a dispensary now?
Yes. I have three dispensaries operating right now and two preliminaries in place.
Have you been in good standing with the AHA since July 1st, 2015?
Not with all of my dispensaries, no.
Any of them?
You mean in good standing? Yes, I have been in
registered,
good standing.
You've been registered with the AHA since July 1st? Of
one of my dispensaries, yes.
Only one's registered?
So that one...
Were they all operating by grandfather?
My other ones would be at risk.
Well, have you taken steps with the other ones to do things like enter into a lease, interview employees?
Yes, yes. And that's, I'm worried about my lease agreements and my contracts.
So you might therefore, sir, at least under Commissioner Fritz's proposal, be eligible for the hardship exemption.
Right.
We have
right.
to decide whether it's cumulative
right.
or illustrative.
Right. And that's, I'm asking for the ruling that any submitted license app to the OHA, that it should have priority, and that gap goes away.
Thank you.
So, I wanted to ask a question of, I still call you Chief. Chief Berg. So, I'm just curious. I mean, you're taking a position against my amendment to lift the 1,000-foot boundary in the central city. That these establishments do not allow people to consume marijuana on the premises unless you have a medical license and you lock yourself behind closed doors. So I'm just curious, I described what I felt were some of the upsides of, we have a downtown core. This is where the action's at. This is where the people are. This is where the tourists are. I mean, what harm do you see of establishments being located closer than 1,000 feet in the downtown core? What's the downside in your
opinion? Well, I want to be clear that we're not necessarily opposing it. We just think that it needs to be vetted more fully. It was a surprise, I think, to many people who live and work downtown that this may be lifted. So in the grand old Portland tradition of plenty of process, I think this is a piece that should have some more process behind it. And there are concerns if one of the ideas is that this will promote tourism. It's a tricky position then for the hotels to be put in because people can't consume that product in the hotel rooms. And if people are coming to buy it, how will they consume the product here in Portland in a way that fits within all the current restrictions and guidelines?
So that's a good point, although I do think that point's going to be solved very quickly. Hotels will set up smoking rooms and things like that. But I guess what you're saying is just really it's the lack of process. You don't necessarily see a downside to retail establishments being located closer than 1,000 feet in the downtown core or central city area.
I don't really feel like I have enough information yet from our constituents to say whether I think it's a good thing or a bad thing. I just know that people are feeling like it should be discussed more fully. We had a downtown retail council meeting this morning, mm-hmm. and a lot of the retailers had many questions about what would this look like in my building, on my block, in my area downtown. And there were some residents there who had questions that we couldn't answer. So I think having more full and robust process around this question would be very helpful.
Thank you all. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay, let's take the next.
Are Samuel Gross, Robert Burke, and Aaron Kennedy.
I think we're going to stop at 1:30 for a break. Yeah. Okay, welcome.
Good afternoon, Mayor, City Commissioners. I thank you for this opportunity to speak. I've spoken to you before about this issue, and I'm encouraged that that you've listened and the proposals are moving in the right direction. A little bit of this.
Put your name in the record again, please.
Excuse me?
Put your name back in the record, please.
Oh, my name is Samuel Gross. I'm an attorney here in the city of Portland. And so I appreciate you guys listening and moving forward in the right direction. First of all, with the proposal for the date of grandfathering in or preferential treatment, whichever term we want to use, I would urge that the date be set at the date of which licenses can first be submitted for in the city, and that the hardship clause would extend all the way through that date to capture everybody that might be in that situation. Also, I would urge you to take a look at and just seeing merely if a OHA application was submitted and they had a date stamp on a submitted and received OHA application, that that would be sufficient, as opposed to creating a circumstances and factors test that needs to be parsed through. That is a bright line rule. It's easy for the city to ascertain and make a determination. The second, I would like to also address the proposal of eliminating the 1,000-foot rule within the central city. I think that this is a good idea moving forward. It addresses the needs of the downtown central core. There's a limited number of available retail spaces due to the concentrations of schools in the area, and second of all, because real estate is extremely challenging in this area, because as you are aware of, you cannot open up a dispensary where there is a mortgage on the property. So therefore, even allowing it, there are not going to be a plethora of them, because most downtown real estate is backed by a commercial mortgage. And I think it does promote the values of tourism and creating a flourishing cannabis industry here in the city of Portland. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I just ask, where did that rule come from about having to have a mortgage, or you can't have a mortgage on a property? Is that a state?
Most mortgages have a clause in them that says that you must be in compliance with all local, state, and federal law. And if you allow cannabis businesses to operate on your property, you will be in technical default, and so therefore a lot of times those lenders will call those loans, and so therefore large institutional investors will not allow those types of businesses to operate where they have loans or investments.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Robert Burke, and I would like some clarification from Ms. Fritz on a couple of items. For starters, what's the definition of a dispensary that's operating and in good standing?
We can have staff come back and address that. We do have a definition of dispensary in the code.
We'll get that. We'll get that cleared up.
Okay. So we've had a licensed facility since early in the year, but we're not operating at this moment. Where am I going to fall then in that?
When did you get your license?
February 20th.
And you're good?
Okay. My other question then is, you also mentioned needing to have a valid City of Portland business license by your cutoff date. So we have not, through miscommunication between me and my CPA, we did not ever register for a business license. So where is that going to put us?
So the intent of the policy is that those who have been serving medical patients do get grandfathered in. So if you haven't actually been serving medical patients and you don't have a business license, then potentially you might not be grandfathered in. You would.
So I'd like to make a point of contention with that, and that I have been serving medical patients. I've been a grower for a very long time. I've been providing dispensaries with the products that they sell to patients. So I've met your requirements, and yet now that we're trying to transition into this other facet of the business, you know, I'm basically going to be told that I'm out of luck because I haven't been operating. But I've put a lot of money into this, and it's taken us 6 months to get permits between the architect and the city of Portland.
Why do you say you're out of luck? This applies to the section about the 1,000-foot rule. So do you know that you are at risk of being bumped by someone else within that 1,000 feet?
Well, potentially anybody could apply if I'm not grandfathered in because I didn't register for a business license in time.
Right, but it's a competitive process. It's first come, first serve.
Nothing's stopping you from applying for one now.
You could be first in line. There could be no one who's grandfathered, and there may be.
Well, I'm in favor of grandfathering. I just would like the date to be extended so that I have time to apply for a business license and be grandfathered in.
Okay.
It would probably be good to apply for a business license. Anyway.
I agree. I agree. I don't think that something like that, a minor detail like that, should prevent us from being grandfathered in based on what we've done, based on the service that we've offered for patients so far.
Thank you for your testimony.
Maybe you could just strike that from the
Thank you for your testimony.
Appreciate it. Thank you. We'll try to get that cleared up one way or the other.
All right.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Erin Kennedy. I am a consultant with Aperture Consulting Group. Formerly, though, I had the privilege of being one of the original inspector investigators with the Oregon Health Authority Medical Marijuana Dispensary Program. So I have a unique perspective of coming from the program that had the inarguably massive challenge of regulating a brand new industry. So I understand the challenges that come with that, and I also understand as an inspector, being the messenger and being full of metaphorical bullet holes all the time. But now on the other side, and also with OHA, understand the level of effort that the entrepreneurs in this room and out in the entire state of Oregon have put into these businesses to run them legitimately, and not just the financial investment, but the emotional investment as well. So I'm here just to offer a bit of a different perspective, not as a dispensary owner, but as someone who's been on the regulatory side and is now on the private compliance regulatory side. The folks that have licenses through the OHA and soon the OLCC have already competed at the state level. They're required by legislation to get those licenses. They shouldn't have to compete again at the city level for a supplemental license. No one argues that the license is not necessary. Salem has done a very good job of implementing a licensing process in that city. They go through all of the process through the state. They pay the thousands of dollars to get the state license. They pay the thousands and thousands of dollars to get their facility licensed and approved and that physical license in their hand before they can even go to Salem and apply for their city license. And it has worked very well, and they had a lot of public involvement in that process. And I think that's why it's worked, and I think that is why that we will come to a common ground here as well, because of the level of public involvement that you've welcomed. I will also say that there are people who have applied through OHA back in July and are still in the queue. So that puts them in a very difficult position. Their applications have not even been looked at. Once they do get looked at, there's quite a long process to even get through their initial 60-day requirements, and then they have to go through city building permits and all sorts of other licensings that delay things. I'll just wrap up and say that competition and market forces are often a lot more powerful than efforts made by the government in regulatory rule. So I encourage the council to look at those factors in mitigating some of the things that you're trying to prevent, and also maybe look at the way that Salem implemented their licensing procedure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Next three are Amy Margolis, Stephanie, I believe the last name is Malott, and we'll go with Donald Morse.
We're meeting two, or a couple of us are.
So we're putting a lot of the regular agenda over.
We're going to have to. Yeah, okay. By the way, folks, we are going to take a 1:30 break. There's some folks waiting here for other council calendar items. We will return to the unaddressed balance of the council calendar from the morning session at 2 p.m. So if you're waiting for another item other than this one, you could come back at 2. You're safe until then.
When do you, did we take up the demolition? What's the afternoon demolition?
Demolition is the
thing. Likely at 3 to 4?
Yeah, more likely we'll get to demolition about 3 o'clock. Okay, welcome.
Thank you. My name is Amy Margolis, and I came here originally. I have been here every time, I think, as well as participated in all of the task force meetings and industry meetings. I'm an attorney, and I work with the Oregon Cannabis Association. I came here originally to support the FISH amendments, although those are off the table at this moment. So I'm going to instead address the amendment that is on the table, which is the Fritz Amendment, and I'm going to ask for some changes in this, and I appreciate the movement that has happened in this process. The meetings were, I think, after seeing the two versions of the amendment, the FISH and the Fritz Amendment, that there has been a lot of progress made, and I think that was hard-won progress for everyone involved, so thank you. I want to make some technical comments about this amendment and ask for some changes. I think that the language in 2A, 1, and 2 should not be registered because it's not really a registration process, it's a licensing process. I agree with Ms. Kennedy and Mr. Gross that the cutoff point should not be when you receive your license due to the enormous backlog at the Oregon Health Authority, but instead should be when your license is time-stamped and received by the Oregon Health Authority. They are in a significantly challenging position in terms of how many inspectors they have and how many people reviewing those licenses. I would ask that in Section 2A2, that language not be cumulative, that the applicant demonstrates they incurred significant financial obligations, so on. That should be an or and not an and. Please. The application process itself is expensive, and simply having one of these following pieces should be enough to demonstrate that they are working towards, with good intentions, towards being an operating medical dispensary. I would also ask that the city consider closing that gap, as Commissioner Fish has suggested, closing the gap between the dates so that final 2 months is captured. I believe if that happens, then this is an amendment that we could support moving forward.
Okay, thank you very much.
My name is Donald Morris. I'm the director of the Oregon Cannabis Business Council. Mr. Mayor, commissioners, thank you for hearing me. Throughout this process, we've been asking that the existing players be allowed a smooth transition to the retail market without fear of losing their investment or being forced to remain a medical dispensary. I believe that you've achieved this in what you've put together. The dates, we believe that everyone who's made an honest attempt to become a player in this should be allowed to do so and be grandfathered in. I agree with Ms. Margolis about the changes in 2A2, that it should be cumulative. And that's really it. I want to thank you for all the work that you folks have done on this, and I know all of our members are appreciative of the fact that you've taken into consideration the effort that they've made in this industry here in the city of Portland. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Welcome.
Commissioners, Mayor, my apologies. I'm actually going to be testifying on behalf of my wife, Stephanie Malott, who is in the audience today. She's experiencing some blood sugar issues. She's actually the impetus for us getting into the cannabis industry. After 26 years of rheumatoid arthritis and successful treatment with cannabis, we felt compelled to be part of this industry. My name is Christopher Malott. I'm speaking to you today on behalf of the Oregon Cannabis Association. We've circulated a petition to all of you that you should have in your hands right now that very well summarizes our sense on these issues at hand. We very much support the direction that Commissioner Fitz's amendment is headed. We felt that, Commissioner Fish, that your amendment was a little more comprehensive, perhaps, than Ms. Fritz. However, you know, understanding where we are today, we are very much looking forward to evolving your amendment, Ms. Fritz. And so I'll say that in the last 24 hours, we have had, since we circulated this petition amongst our members in the association, we've had approximately 45 businesses sign this petition that represents about 560 employees cumulatively here in the Portland metropolitan area. They're employed by these businesses or derivative services markets. We're very, very much looking forward to understanding this process better and hearing some final information on the amendments at hand.
Thank you very much. Thank you all.
I wanted to ask, Amy, where is the, you're looking for the word cumulative to be in
Well, it's just the effect of those things on the, on the last line.
I've captured it, and I think Commissioner Fish now have an amendment.
Entering a lease, hiring employees, or obtaining fixtures is not cumulative. Entering a lease, hiring